90 minutes down, 90 minutes to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning, the 5th of December, 2015. Drew Mundell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the show Ben Raby. Ben is the Capitals pre- and post-game show host on the Capitals Radio Network. You can also see his work on the WashingtonPost.com website. Ben, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good to be with you, fellas. How are you?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Ben?
We're good.
That's good. Glad to hear it. Brought you on, of course, to talk about the Capitals as they play tonight in Winnipeg. Winners of six in a row, including a key Eastern Conference matchup on Thursday against the Montreal Canadiens. Braden Holtby, how much credit, in your mind, does he deserve for the Capitals' recent six-game winning streak and their 8-1-1 record in their last 10 games?
Yeah, a lot of credit. A lot of credit for their season as a whole. The Capitals are actually off to their best start in franchise history at 18-5-1, and Braden Holtby has been a big reason why. NHL high 16 wins for Holtby, but more recently, talking about that six-game winning streak, particularly the last two games, in Toronto last Saturday on Hockey Night in Canada and in Montreal the other night, a big test against the Canadiens. The Capitals come into Winnipeg this afternoon. Their last two games, the Capitals, have not been pretty. Arguably, a case could be made. Both the Maple Leafs and Canadiens deserve to win those two games, the Capitals' two most recent games. And as Barry Trotz likes to say, the past two games are the latest example of Holtby probably cleaning up a lot of mistakes in front of him. The Capitals were badly outshot for large stretches against both the Maple Leafs and Canadiens, and not to suggest that will continue today in Winnipeg, but Holtby has been certainly picking up the slack, you could say, for a team that otherwise has been enjoying, of course, a very good season. But of late, I would say don't be tricked by that six-game winning streak. Capitals have some areas to clean up in their game coming into play today.
Ben, Evgeny Kuznetsov is leading the Washington Capitals in scoring right now, as you know, and a lot of people might be surprised by that because we've been used to seeing Alexander Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom at the top of the scoring leaders for the Capitals for really the last 10 years now, right? What's the biggest difference between Evgeny Kuznetsov's game this year as compared to last year?
Yeah, the truth is a little bit under the radar. Kuznetsov really started to pick up his play, I would say, the second half of last season. And if you recall, in the Stanley Cup playoffs, he and Ovechkin were actually tied for the Capitals scoring lead. And it was interesting because you figure a rookie, you know, usually by the end of the year, maybe they sort of hit that rookie wall or they start to trail off. It was actually just the opposite with Kuznetsov, who had played quite a few years over in Russia in the Continental Hockey League. Had a few years of pro experience under his belt. So he came to the NHL really late 2 years ago, actually. He played 17 games in 13-14. And it took him a while. It took him a while to adjust to the North American game, the smaller rink, all those areas. But it was really the second half of last season, after he'd even sat as a healthy scratch a couple of times, it really started to click. He did learn a lot, or he has learned a lot, I should say, from both Alex Ovechkin and also, perhaps more importantly, he's learned a lot playing behind Nicholas Backstrom, who, you know, a case could be made is one of the more underrated two-way centers in the game. He doesn't necessarily get a whole lot of that national recognition playing behind Alex Ovechkin, of course. But in Backstrom and Kuznetsov, right now, the Capitals have, for the first time in quite some time, really the first time since Sergei Fedorov was here, they have a 1-2 punch down the middle, which so many teams, right, try to get that 1-2 punch down the middle. It's been a revolving door in these parts for years with the number two center position behind Nicholas Backstrom. And finally at long last, between Backstrom and Kuznetsov, two guys who really are interchangeable on those top two lines. Kuznetsov has actually played quite a bit this year on the top line with Ovechkin, and that's no slight at all on Nicholas Backstrom. It really is, again, for the first time in quite some time, a really formidable 1-2 punch here.
Hey, Ben, you talk about that 1-2 punch, but we were talking at the top of the show about just the depth that the Capitals have. You know, you look at that fourth line, and I guess you call it fourth line, but Michael Latta, Tom Wilson, Brooks Lake, and you have your third line or fourth, however you want to distinguish them, Jay Beagle, Burakovsky, and Chimera, depending on injuries and such. How much different is that depth and the style that these Capitals lines bring to the team that the teams even a couple of years ago that maybe didn't have that kind of depth and physical presence.
Yeah, it is a little bit more of that bring your lunch pail mentality, that's for sure, compared to a few years ago, and a little bit more of the high flying Capitals you would have seen in 09, 10, 11, etc. But yeah, certainly a team, the Capitals right now, and again, I keep referencing, it starts with Barry Trotz, but it is very much a team that is sort of trying to build in a way that they could wear and tear and grind you out. And Jason Chimera is the perfect example. He's got wheels, but a guy who certainly isn't afraid to go to the corners and the high traffic areas, et cetera, and play a little bit more of that gritty game. But between the Jay Beagles, the Jason Chimera, Tom Wilson, who's a big boy at 6'4", 215 pounds, a little bit of grit and sort of the plumber game that, you're right, going back a few years ago, wasn't necessarily always here. So, you know, not necessarily relying on those guys to fill the back of the net, although Chimera with 7 goals this year has already matched his total from last season. So they're getting some contributions from there, but a bottom six that certainly, when you think of what a bottom six ought to do and ought to be built for, they do fit that criteria as well.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Ben Raby. Ben is the Washington Capitals pre- and post-game show host on the Capitals Radio Network. Ben, coming into today's this afternoon's game against the Jets, Marcus Johansson is a game-time decision with some undisclosed injury, nothing major. But wanted to ask you about Johansson. You know, what does he do for the Capitals? He's sort of, you know, under the radar, obviously behind Ovechkin and Backstrom and Kuznetsov, who are getting all the headlines now. But you know, how important of a cog is Marcus Johansson in making the Capitals' top six forward group go and their first team power play?
Yeah, again, a formidable player for that second line. I would think really that's, I don't want to say his ceiling, but yeah, in a sense it is his ceiling. He had an opportunity a few years ago to play on the top line with Backstrom and Ovechkin, and he's sort of found a little bit more of a home, if you will, on that second line over the past couple of seasons under Barry Trotz. But he is on the top power play unit. A power play unit, which is obviously very reliant on Nicholas Backstrom on the half wall and Alex Ovechkin in his office, so to say, on the left faceoff circle looking for that one-timer. But Marcus Johansson on the top power play, too. He works below the goal line in that 1-3-1 setup, and he's been a fixture. He's been a guy who, yeah, he's a game-time decision today, but a guy who doesn't have a history of injuries. He's sort of been an 80-plus games a year guy for a few years now, and just a piece on this team that has been here since 2011 and sort of, you know, contributes offensively. And, you know, maybe his two-way game is something that's still, you know, still a work in progress over the years. But a guy who, you know, you can count on for, you know, 10, 15 goals a year and 80-plus games.
Ben, another injured player, Capital, that we wanted to ask you about is Brooks Orpik. And last time the Jets played the Washington Capitals in Washington, of course, Brooks Orpik wasn't in the lineup. I know that he's not traveling with the team right now, but how close is Brooks Orpik to returning to the Capitals lineup? And how have they missed Orpik in the lineup? How have they done without him? Because he eats up a lot of minutes and faces the other team's best competition. He's obviously a great physical defenseman.
Yeah, and not to take anything away from Brooks Orpik, to answer that last part of the question, how have they done without him? They have managed just fine record-wise without him. The Capitals are 8-1-1 in those 10 games that Orpik has missed. That said, one guy to keep an eye on today who's really picked up the slack in Orpik's absence is a guy who plays a much different game. Orpik is that big, stay-at-home, physical type of defenseman. He had been paired with John Carlson on the number one pairing in his absence, and a guy to keep an eye on today. Nate Schmidt, number 88 for the Capitals, third-year pro right now. He's got wheels, a little bit more of an offensive-minded guy, but he, in Orpik's absence, has been paired with John Carlson on that number one pairing, and Nate Schmidt, for the first time in his career over this 10-game stretch, has really regularly seen 20-plus minutes a night and has not looked out of place. So that's been encouraging for the Capitals that Nate Schmidt has been able to pick up the slack in Orpik's absence. That said, how serious is Brooks Orpik's injury? He's missed 10 games. He remains day-to-day. He has been over the past few weeks. The company line, Barry Trotz insists, it's not serious. If it were later in the season, if it were playoff time, he probably would be suiting up. But the Capitals are taking advantage of the fact, at least they say, that it is November, December now. It's still relatively early in the season. And I keep coming back. I think the fact that Nate Schmidt and Taylor Chorney is the sixth defenseman haven't looked out of place, and the team is sort of, you know, chugging along minus Orpik. They're giving him all the time he might need to fully recover from this lower body injury, which, again, they say is not serious. There's no surgery required, nothing like that. Sounds like he could return as early as Tuesday night when the team returns home. But team has done okay without him, but he will be a welcome addition when he's ready to go.
Ben, who's been the better addition of the two new right-wingers, T.J. Oshie or Justin Williams?
Well, it's hard to say. They bring different areas to the game, but Oshie has certainly, as you can imagine, embraced that top-line role coming off two goals the other night in Montreal. He's 8 on the season now, Oshie. But playing with Ovechkin at the start of the season, I think T.J. Oshie himself admits he was a little bit guilty, perhaps, of looking to number 8 a little too often, trying to complete the sort of cute play, but he's adjusted over the past couple of weeks, and, you know, we're a quarter of the way plus into the season, 24, 25 games. He's been a fixture. He's remained on that top line. There's been no line juggling of that sort. So Oshie has certainly found a home alongside Ovechkin, and whether it's Kuznetsov or Backstrom on the second line. As far as Justin Williams, took him a little bit of time when he came here after all those years in Los Angeles. He was a little bit used to that style of play that they play with the Kings, a little bit more focused on a down-the-middle type of game here. It's a little bit more along the walls, and he has adjusted and been a fixture as well on the penalty-killing unit, and whether it's on the second line or the third line, has fared very well with his teammates and with some younger guys too, whether it's a Kuznetsov or an Andrei Burakovsky. Justin Williams has brought that experience as advertised and been a good addition so far.
Ben, we'll let you go on this last question. When the Capitals replaced George McPhee with Brian McClellan, there's sort of a lot of, you know, raised eyebrows maybe around the league because nobody really knows much about Brian McClellan, and you still to this day hear very little from him. You know, what can you tell us about the Capitals' general manager? He's been on the job now for a couple of years. It seems like he's done a pretty solid job. Certainly, you know, he gets out, you know, he acquires Justin Williams in free agency. He trades for T.J. Oshie, just very quietly under the radar. Are sort of going about doing his job for, you know, to be an anonymous general manager in this day and age in the NHL, it's sort of rare. What do you know about Brian McClellan, about, you know, his personality and, you know, how sort of a philosophy he might have in going about his business?
Yeah, and you say a little bit of a head scratcher maybe league-wide because he wasn't necessarily a well-known name with no prior GM experience. It was a little bit of a head scratcher in these parts too, truthfully, when he was hired, because he had actually spent 14 years in the front office here, be it in an assistant role or in a scouting capacity, and the thought was that when George McPhee was dismissed, it was going to be, we need somebody with a different mentality, somebody who will do things differently than the prior regime. And Brian McClellan, even though he worked under George McPhee, I will say this, has come in and been, I guess you could say, a little bit more aggressive than George McPhee would have been, just in terms of, you know, length of contracts. You look at the Brooks Orpik and the Matt Niskanen signings two off seasons ago. Those were the types of signings the Capitals had not done in quite some time, as far as long-term going out for the, you know, really Matt Niskanen, if you recall, two off seasons ago, was really among the most coveted free agents, and they offered him 7 years and 40-plus million. So that was an aggressive move. Brooks Orpik, too, some thought maybe even overpaid, but he set out, McClellan did. He wanted two defensemen. He wanted to bolster the Capitals' blue line. He went out and he did it. This past offseason, the Capitals made it known they wanted to acquire a top-line right wing. He felt the free agency pool was a little thin. He went out and made a trade, sent Troy Brouwer to St. Louis along with a prospect, brought in T.J. Oshie. So what he has done is, even publicly, he said he wants these types of players. And then within, whether it's a few weeks or a few months, he goes out and he has acquired them. He's been aggressive and so far has been able to successfully pick up the assets he has sought out for and not afraid to dole out the years or the dollars. And we'll see how that comes up in a few years from now, how we'll be reviewing these moves. But so far in the early going, they've been well-received in these parts.
Ben Raby is the Washington Capitals pre- and post-game show host on the Capitals Radio Network. You can also read his work on WashingtonPost.com. Ben, appreciate your time this morning and enjoy this afternoon's Jets-Capitals game. Really appreciate you joining us.
Likewise, fellas. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we discuss Tampa Bay Lightning head coach John Cooper and his contract extension. Big thanks to Ben Raby for joining us to talk about the Washington Capitals ahead of their contest this afternoon in Winnipeg against the Jets. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on iTunes, on TSN 1290.ca, and of course on IllegalCurve.com.
Raging against the Mindell.
Yes, they always rage against the Mindell. Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life, coming up on June the 5th, 2016. Join IC in raising money for the Riverview Health Center by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca or send us a tweet at Illegal Curve, and we'll be sure to get you some more information about this great event coming up in June.
So we already know that producer Alex has joined Team Illegal Curve.
He has.
Which is, he's the first person to join the team that isn't a member of Illegal Curve. Who's going to be the next? I want someone right now on Twitter to tweet at us.
Yeah.
And join our team, because join this team is going to be a great cause. We're going to raise a lot of money.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a lot of fun.
We're going to have a ton of fun. We're going to raise a lot of money. The best part about this is because Al's actually, you know, a really good cyclist and, you know, mountain bikes and does this all regularly. I understand he's going to ride 100 kilometers so that the three of us don't actually have to do anything at all. He just gets to do all the work and we just get all the credit and the glory.
Richie and I are actually going to ride unicycles.
Oh, unicycles. That's an interesting one. Thought it was tandem bikes, but unicycles are a better idea. Anyways, John Cooper, Tampa Bay Lightning head coach, signs a contract extension. It's a reportedly a two-year contract extension. His contract was due to expire at the end of the regular season. You know, nobody can argue with the job John Cooper has done in Tampa Bay since taking over there.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, getting them to the Stanley Cup Finals last season. Another off to a decent start this year for the Lightning. Not as good as they probably would have hoped, but a little sluggish actually. But that's no surprise given a Stanley Cup hangover. Deserving of the extension, but do you think this has a negative impact on the Lightning's chances to re-sign Steven Stamkos?
It's a good question. I've said it for a while now, I don't think Steven Stamkos is going back to Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. Just if he would have wanted to go back, he would have been back by now. I know we're going to talk about that a little later in the show. It's a good question, though, Drew. It may have a tad. It may. But if you look at it from the Tampa perspective, I mean, John Cooper's done a tremendous job there. I mean, the team plays a certain style of play. I think he does a good job taking pressure off of his squad. Their team is more than just Steven Stamkos. So I have no issue at all. I think it's a very logical extension to give to Cooper. And I understand making decisions to keep big-time players around. I understand it more so if you don't have a lot of players. They have a lot of players there.
Mm-hmm.
Hedman and obviously the younger, the triplet line from last year, you know, they haven't been maybe as effective as they were last season. But you have a lot of good players there, and you can't make a decision strictly on what one player wants, especially when you have a bunch of other guys who can contribute. So it may be a very fair question, and he hasn't utilized him maybe the way Steven Stamkos wants to be utilized. And you could argue with it to an extent, but they also got to the Stanley Cup Final last year. And lost to, I thought, a better Chicago Blackhawk team.
I thought the timing, Richie, was a little bit curious with this contract extension, because the Tampa Bay Lightning this year, and that includes Steven Stamkos, and as you mentioned, the triplet line, Andre Palat's injured right now, so we should mention that. But
so is Tyler Johnson.
Tyler Johnson is injured. Palat, I guess, more seriously. Johnson isn't out for an extended period of time, to my knowledge, but mm-hmm. Andre Palat mm-hmm. has been out for a few weeks. I believe Johnson's just day-to-day.
He is day-to-day. He's been out since the 28th of November,
right.
So it's been
about
a week.
Yeah, he's missed a few games. But this Tampa Bay Lightning team, Richie, is treading water right now, and Steven Stamkos hasn't been lighting it up like you'd expect for a guy that scored 50 goals before, right? So the contract extension doesn't surprise me, but the timing, maybe you do that in the offseason. Sure, these things take time, but the point is, the Tampa Bay Lightning, I picked to win the Stanley Cup, which is no surprise because they went there last year.
Yep.
But to me, I see this team, and the way they're constructed now, I think the Capitals are a better team. I think the Rangers are a better team. I think there's other teams in the Western Conference, too, that are still better than this Tampa Bay Lightning team, and you wonder if they're starting to have a bit of a Stanley Cup hangover effect. We know it's tough to go back to the Stanley Cup final in back-to-back years. You think mm-hmm. teams like the LA Kings and the Chicago Blackhawks do this all the time, mm-hmm. but in today's day and age, with 16 teams making the playoffs and basically all 30 teams having a chance up until 1 month left in the season, it's difficult to do it. And I think the Tampa Bay Lightning, even though I think they'll get it going here, you know, have a few things to work out. And Ben Bishop hasn't been as good as he was certainly last year in the playoffs. And it's not all on Ben Bishop, but I think, you know, injuries are part of it. But you have to have other players that are stepping up, right? Jonathan Drouin
if you don't sign him, he's going elsewhere quickly.
Oh, right. And I'm a big fan of John Cooper, and I know that, you know, when you look at his background, he's had success at the HL level with a lot of the players that have come up through the Tampa Bay Lightning system.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's got a different style to him, right? He's I think a new age coach as opposed to an old school coach like a Ken Hitchcock or a Mike Babcock. And there's nothing wrong with those two coaches. I think Hitchcock and Babcock are the two best coaches in the league. But you're talking about a guy who has now had a lot of success. He's got to the Stanley Cup Finals. Why wouldn't you re-sign him? Because he's been part of this.
The only reason you wouldn't re-sign him is if Stamkos's representatives have said behind the scenes, you know, it's either us or him, or some degree, you know, we might want to be here. We'd be more likely to be here if this guy wasn't
here. First
of
all, money talks. Okay, so whatever money talks. I mean, if they think they can get the most amount of money out of Tampa Bay over the free agent market, which is probably unlikely, then they're going to sign there, in my opinion. Donnie Meehan especially, because he's a bit of a snake. You know, he's a guy who can kind of play, you know, he's not.
Yeah, he advocates strongly for his clients.
I can probably go a little stronger than that.
Sure,
I'm a bit of a snake in negotiations.
Right? You're saying he's a little bit slithery.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think he's going to try and obviously maximize dollars, and doesn't mean other guys don't maximize dollars. But my point is, if you allow Stamkos to make that, or if you wait on that decision on Stamkos, what happens then is you risk losing both of them.
Sure. If John Cooper says, you know what, you guys
you keep making me wait. See ya.
Free agent. Look, Mike Babcock, we saw what a free agent coach who's well-regarded has done for the market.
That was my other point, is he only signed a two-year extension here. I mean, think about it from Tampa's perspective. It's pretty low risk, considering the job he's done. Look at Babcock. You sign for 8 years for a National Hockey League coach. Some of these guys, after 30 games, people want their head.
Back to Drew's question, though, Rich.
What was Drew's question?
It was
about breakfast.
No, I'm pretty hungry right now.
Yeah, there you go. I got him distracted. It didn't take much.
The question about how much this impacts Steven Stamkos and his ability to re-sign with the Tampa Bay Lightning, you have to ask the question, well, how bad is the relationship between John Cooper and Steven Stamkos, right? We don't really know the full extent
to that question. Bad.
Well, exactly. I mean, you watched the playoffs last year, and you could say, as Rich mentioned, Steven Stamkos was underutilized, and he was deferring too much to the triplets line when Steven Stamkos should have maybe be given some of those, especially offensive in-game situations, Rich, where he maybe was leaning towards that Johnson line, and that Johnson-Kucherov-Palat line was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, was that maximizing Steven Stamkos' ability? And I think it wasn't.
Fair enough, but he's wanting to maximize the team's ability, and his view is that they were going to be better. And certainly Stamkos was angry about it. I mean, best players on the team, talent-wise.
Captain of the team, everything.
Or, you know, maybe you want to argue Hedman, but I still think it's Stamkos.
It's Stamkos.
Best players on the team want to play.
Yep.
In the interest of fairness, it is worth noting that Steven Stamkos leads all Tampa Bay Lightning forwards this year in time on ice per game at 19 minutes and 31 seconds.
Sure does.
How much of that is a function of Palat and Johnson both having been out of the lineup, I don't know. But the interest of fairness, he is playing Stamkos the most of all the forwards.
Well, we talk about Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien a lot here in Winnipeg and whether the Jets are going to re-sign those two players. But you look at Steven Stamkos, to me, that's the most interesting situation in the entire league. Sure, Anje Kopitar is a pending UFA, and you have other pending UFAs, but I think Stamkos is a different level than Anje Kopitar, mm-hmm. in my opinion. Anje Kopitar is a great player, and he's rebounded nicely this year, but Steven Stamkos, you're talking about a guy who should be the highest paid guy in the league, if not top three highest paid guys in the league, and right now we have no idea. There's a distinct possibility, guys, that the Tampa Bay Lightning, Stevie Yzerman, Steve Thomas, there's a good chance that they keep Steven Stamkos past the deadline and he leaves as a UFA. He's that good that there's always that option that they keep him because they want to go far in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but they don't have a trade they like. I mean, if you're talking trade possibilities with Steven Stamkos, you're talking about a haul that's similar to something that we haven't seen in a really long time, right? Like, you're talking you're not talking a Wayne Gretzky situation, but you're talking about a situation where you're going to have to give up a first rounder, maybe a couple first rounders, a roster player, some prospects. He's going to get a lot.
For 20 games, the guy, and I mean, don't get me wrong, he's a dynamic player. I agree with you. It'd be a big haul.
As much as
but
we
you
talk
have to
about,
trade him, you, yeah. if you're not going to sign him, you got to trade him. I mean,
yeah. You do. You can't afford to. It's a franchise crippling move to lose a guy like that for nothing.
And I hear Izzy's point. If they keep him, they have a better probably chance, almost assuredly, of winning the Stanley Cup. And that window doesn't always stay open for very long.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times joins us to talk about the Blackhawks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Third hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program from the Chicago Sun-Times. He covers the Chicago Blackhawks, Mark Lazarus. Mark, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, no problem.
Mark obviously brought you on to talk about the Hawks ahead of the Jets' visit to Chicago tomorrow afternoon. Blackhawks will be sitting waiting for the Jets, having last played Thursday in Ottawa, where they fell at the hands of the Senators. But wanted to start off by talking about Patrick Kane. I mean, he's certainly leading the NHL in points. He's been absolutely fantastic this year with 41 points in 26 games played. We were talking about it earlier briefly on the show. You know, to your mind, is he the best player in the NHL right now?
Right now, I think without question. I mean, you can argue, Sagan and Ben in Dallas, but they have each other on their line. So they're obviously playing off of each other. Right now, Patrick Kane is single-handedly carrying the entire Blackhawks offense, basically. That line with Artemi Panarin and Artem Anisimov are basically the entire Blackhawks offense right now. And what they're doing, it's pretty extraordinary. Every night, it's just goal after goal after goal.
You know, Mark, you had a nice story about Duncan Keith and how well he's played since coming back from surgery. And, you know, I was, as many people were, watching the Chicago Blackhawks in their Stanley Cup run last year. I mean, I hadn't seen a defenseman dominate a game or a series like that since maybe Scotty Niedermeyer back in 2003. Are you surprised that Duncan Keith has been so good coming back from injury, or should we not be surprised for a guy that is a perennial top defenseman in the NHL?
We really shouldn't be surprised. I mean, we always joke around Chicago that he's a cyborg. I mean, he just played forever and ever and ever. And, you know, this wasn't knee surgery. This was getting his circuitry rewired. I mean, he's not human. I mean, that was the running joke last year, was when, you know, Ryan Kessler said no human can withstand all this punishment that the Ducks were giving out. Well, Duncan Keith's not human. He's out there. He was playing 40 minutes some nights with these triple overtime games, 40, 50 minutes, and coming back in the next game and being completely fine. He never seems winded. He never seems tired. He gets better as the game goes on. He never seems to fatigue out there. And that's why it was weird the first week or two of the season. He didn't quite look like himself. And sure enough, he had the knee problem that it apparently happened during the Stanley Cup final. In game 3 or 4, someone fell on him, and his knee and his calf were bugging him. So it turned out it was a meniscal tear. Being a professional athlete, he didn't tell anybody about it until late. And he came back, and he's got 10 points in 10 games since coming back. And he came back early from the knee surgery, 3.5 weeks. It's hard to be surprised by him at this point.
Mark, Jonathan Taves dropping the gloves. A concern for the Blackhawks.
Noted Dune, Jonathan Taves.
Yeah, exactly. You know, a concern for the Blackhawks at all, or just loving his passion and the emotion of the game?
I think everyone, you know, appreciates what he's doing out there and loves that, but nobody wants to see that. The last, if there's an indispensable player on any team in the NHL, it's Jonathan Taves and the Blackhawks. I mean, the whole dominoes fall down if he breaks his hand on someone's helmet in a stupid fight. Mm-hmm. It was kind of funny when he went after Adam Henrique out of nowhere in that New Jersey game early November. It was not shocking when he went after David Backes, because he and David Backes do not like each other. When he tried to get Ryan Kessler into a fight, they've hated each other since those Canucks-Hawks rivalry games. But you don't want to see him doing that. I mean, the Hawks don't have an enforcer. They got this Brandon Mishintra kid who's kind of used to be an enforcer, but he's trying to, you know, establish himself as a real hockey player now. They don't have a guy who can do that, but you certainly don't want Jonathan Toews. Let Andrew Shaw do that. Let Brent Seabrook do that. Let someone other than your top center and arguably one of the two or three best players in the world do that.
You said Joe Thornton's still the top of the hatred rankings?
Oh, God, no question. Those guys, I remember when Jonathan Toews was the captain of the All-Star team last year, I asked him, is there anyone that you wouldn't be comfortable picking? He's like, oh, no way. I'm like, what about Joe Thornton? He just kind of stared at me for 10 seconds and then kind of shrugged.
That's awesome.
They do not like each other. That one goes way back.
Mark Lazarus is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show discussing the Chicago Blackhawks. We talked about Jonathan Toews and, you know, his fisticuffs. You look at his, you know, forward line, and I mean, he's, you know, 15 points, 26 games. You know, Jonathan Toews is Jonathan Toews. But, you know, his wingers haven't been able to get going. They've played him with different lines. They reunited him on Thursday with Marian Hossa and Tuvo Teravainen. You know, how do the Blackhawks get sort of that secondary scoring going? You know, we know that Anisimov and Panarin and Kane especially have been going fine, but really it's very top heavy right now for the Blackhawks.
Well, that's the problem. They've tried nearly everybody on Toews' line. We're only 26 games into the season. He's played with, let's see, Andrew Shaw, Tuvo Teravainen. He's played with Panarin, Garbutt, Hossa. Basically anyone on the team other than that second line has had a stint on that time. Victor Tikhonov, I mean, everyone who they have has had a try. Marco Dano. And none of them are getting there for more than a game or two. At some point, you know, Joel Quenneville, he always tinkers. He loves to tinker. And he's at his best when he's moving people around. But at some point, he needs to just come up with a top line, say, you three guys, figure it out, get some chemistry going, and get it going. I think the obvious one is the one he had in the last game, which is Teravainen and Toews and Hossa. Toews and Hossa have been playing together for years. When it was Sharp, Toews and Hossa, it was the best line in hockey. When it was Brandon Saad, Toews and Hossa, it was one of the best lines in hockey. They need Toews and Hossa on that top line to be a force. And there's no reason Tavo Teravainen, he's a right wing and a center by trade. He can figure out the left wing. He just needs to be up there for a few games, figure it out, deal with the growing pains, and then they'll be fine. But that's the problem is the first, third, and fourth lines are changing shift by shift, game by game. You're not getting any kind of chemistry because people are moving around so much. And at some point, Joel's going to have to kind of just let it go for a few days and see what happens, because you can't keep doing this forever.
Now, Mark, we talked about Duncan Keith earlier, and last year in the playoffs, as you know, the Chicago Blackhawks, for the most part, were using four defensemen with Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Nicholas Jarmelson, and Johnny Oduya. And there was a lot of talk, I'd probably say maybe 2-3 weeks ago, that Trevor Daley was someone that the Chicago Blackhawks wanted to trade. Yeah. Of course, coming over from Dallas, doesn't have a goal yet. He's only got 5 points. Do you believe that the Chicago Blackhawks are seriously considering trading Trevor Daley now? And if they do make a trade, are they going to look to get what kind of defenseman are they looking to acquire? Obviously, someone probably to be a second pairing guy, right?
Well, if they do make a move, Daley would be the logical guy. He's $3.5 million a year, and he's the number 5 defenseman on this team right now. Trevor Van Riemsdyk has passed him up on that number 4 guy. That's not what you need out of that. You know, the Hawks are so stressed up against the cap right now, you can't have a number 5 guy making that much money. He's been better lately, significantly better. Now that Michael Roosevelt came back from injury, it's kind of stabilized that third pairing. Daley was playing with rookies. He was playing with Eric Gustafson or Victor Svedberg a little bit, or David Rundblad, and it wasn't going well. It's been better, significantly better lately, but he needs to create some offense. I mean, that's what they got him for. He's not Johnny Oduya. He's not a stay-at-home kind of guy. They need more offense out of him, and he's been better lately. He just keeps missing the net, or he's been a little bit snake-bit out there. But I don't know for sure that they're going to move someone, and if they do, it wouldn't necessarily be for a defenseman. I mean, they would love to upgrade on defense, but they really liked what they saw out of Eric Gustafson, the rookie. And Victor Svedberg held his own. He's 6'9", and he really held his own for a few weeks up there. They need scoring right now. They need secondary scoring. Their third and fourth lines are a mess right now. It's just a bunch of rookies or kind of journeymen. There's no offense there right now. And I think defense is a concern, yes, but I think they need scoring more. They need secondary scoring right now more than they need defense. I think Trevor Daley is fine. He's nothing special right now, but he's fine. If they can figure out a way, they got to bring up Brian Bickle back from Rockford, see if they can make the cap work on there. He's been doing well in the AHL for this last 10 games. They need scoring. They need someone on that third line. When the Hawks are at their best, when they won the Cup in 2013, their fourth line was Michael Frolik, Dave Boland, and Marcus Kruger. Uh-huh. That's a second line on some teams. That's what makes them good, is that depth, and they don't have that this year.
You talked about Joel Quenneville, you know, moving the lines around. He's always been like that. He likes to keep people, you know, on the edge of their seat, kind of like Scotty Bowman-esque, Mark. Was he disappointed at all, or even offended somewhat, that he didn't get named head coach Team Canada?
I don't think so. He seemed genuinely flattered and honored to be a part of the staff. I mean, yes, Joel Quenneville's NHL resume is significantly better than Mike Babcock's, especially recently. But, I mean, it's not like Mike Babcock has failed at any point with Team Canada. I mean, all they do is win. I mean, how do you remove a guy who all he does is win? So I think it's, you know, if Babcock ever doesn't want to do it anymore, I'm sure that Quenneville would be the next one up. He certainly deserves it. 3 cups in 6 years speaks for itself. He's going to be the second winningest coach of all time by the end of this season. But you can't fault them for going with Babcock when all they do is win gold medals.
There was news years ago, I don't know if it's still talked about at all, that Stan Bowman, or divide between the Bowmans it was, and Joel Quenneville. Was that ever real? And if it was, does it still exist?
Winning cures everything. That was in the spring of 2012, after they lost in the first round for the second straight time, and all of a sudden that 2010 team was that a fluke? Do they have to reconfigure this team? Do they got to blow it up? There was genuine tension there, and I think that Joel was genuinely on the hot seat, or Stan was even genuinely on the hot seat. If they had lost, I always go back to that second round series against Detroit in 2013. They had lost that series. They were down 3-1 in that series. It would have been a first round loss, second round loss. Somebody loses their job there. Either Quenneville or Bowman loses his job there if they don't come back and win that series. And everything's different. The whole trajectory of this franchise changes. There was legitimate tension there, but right now, winning cures everything. 3 cups in 6 years. Nobody's going anywhere.
Mark, we just have a few last questions, and we appreciate you coming on in anticipation of the couple of Blackhawks games coming up against the Jets. Wanted to ask you about another Russian player, Viktor Tikhonov, and I know Artemi Panarin has been a revelation for the Blackhawks. He's up there amongst the rookie scoring leaders, but Viktor Tikhonov has been a healthy scratch as of late. Didn't have any points in 11 games for the Chicago Blackhawks after coming over from the KHL, but do you see him getting back into the lineup anytime soon, and what did you think of his game when he was in the lineup for the Hawks?
Yeah, I didn't mind his game, to borrow a Joel Quenneville-ism. I thought he was okay. He was playing on that top line with Taves and Hossa for a few games, and Hossa really liked him there. He thought that he was a good fit in that spot. But, Joel keeps tinkering and figuring things out. Viktor Tikhonov can play in this league. I think that goes without question. But Joel Quenneville, for whatever reason, hasn't put him in for a couple of weeks now. He's been sitting there on the bench or in the press box. I don't know exactly what's going to make. I mean, there was talk that when they signed him, it was kind of a package deal with Panarin because they're good friends and line mates. And Tikhonov's been phenomenal. He's served as Panarin's kind of guide to America and a translator in the locker room. But he's a good hockey player in his own right. He just needs a couple of chances here. There are guys in the lineup right now like Brandon Mischinter, that aren't doing a whole lot. They're playing 3 or 4 or 5 minutes a game. I don't see why Viktor Tikhonov can't get in there and get an opportunity. And I think that'll happen soon enough. But as of right now, I mean, there's always an odd man out, like a David Rundblad. He's just perpetually in that press box, never gets to play. There's just always guys like that.
Mark, we'll let you go on this last question. It's about another one of the offseason acquisitions for the Hawks. He came over in the Brandon Saad trade. That's Marco Dano. He's got one goal and one assist so far. Obviously, the Blackhawks have to be disappointed with his output thus far this year. What's been his biggest bugaboo? Why such a lack of performance from Marco Dano?
He just turned 21, so you got to give a guy a little bit of a leash here. I mean, he only made the Blue Jackets last year because they were so injury-riddled. I mean, they were a disaster. He probably wouldn't have been called up if they were healthy. He had that great run, which showed a lot of promise, but he's just a kid. And he's kind of in the similar situation that Teuvo Teravainen was in last year, where he's up, but he's not really quite all the way ready yet. He has flashes, and maybe a little more time in Rockford would help out the way it did for Teravainen last year, and he kind of burst onto the scene in the playoffs. Dano, those first couple of days of training camp, he was on that top line with Taves and Hossa. He led the team in scoring in Notre Dame in training camp. And then once the preseason started, he admitted it. He said the game was all of a sudden a little faster than I was ready for. I think he's going to be fine. He's showing some decent games these last couple games. He's a scrappy kid. He's out there, you know, messing in post-whistle scrums, and he'll be fine. He's a very talented kid, but he's just a kid. He just turned 21. And I think it was unfair to expect him to have the same kind of impact on the defending Stanley Cup champions that he had on an injury-riddled last-place team last year. You have to give him some time.
Mark Lazarus covers the Chicago Blackhawks for the Chicago Sun-Times. Mark, really appreciate your time this morning, and enjoy tomorrow afternoon's Jets-Blackhawks game there in Chicago.
I enjoy every afternoon game. They're the best.
No worries about deadline at that point in time, right?
Exactly.
Hey, Mark, Mark, any idea if they're going to be playing Hotline Bling by Drake tomorrow at United Center?
Oh, my God. In Ottawa, they play like 75 Drake songs. I get it. He's Canadian. There's other people from Canada, too, you know.
Mark, thanks very much for joining us, buddy.
All right, guys. See you.
Take care. Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times. Let's head to break. When we come back, we are going to... What are we going to do when we come back? We're going to talk about the Montreal Canadiens losing Carey Price and look back at 20 years since one of the most seminal moments that we can remember probably of our hockey childhood. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Happy now, Ezzy? You got your hotline bling? Actually, anytime Ezzy calls for a pizza, he gets a hotline bling, I believe.
It's Drizzy.
I know who it is. I'm Drizzy. He's Drizzy.
God.
Drew's actually the ambassador to deli meat for the city of Toronto, whereas Drake is the ambassador to the Toronto Raptors.
It's a true story there. It's quite an honor to have achieved that. Big thanks to Mark Lazarus for joining us in the previous segment to talk about the Blackhawks ahead of tomorrow evening's Jets-Blackhawks game, a game, of course, you can hear on TSN 1290, much like you can hear this afternoon's contest on TSN 1290. Also, programming note, it's a TSN 3 game, so if you're looking for this afternoon's game, it's on TSN 3. It's not on
TSN Ocho?
It's not on TSN Ocho. It's not on, you might think Saturday it's on one of those other networks. It's not. TSN 3. So you can hear the dulcet tones of Dennis Bayak and Shane Knighty with a call of the game, or on radio, Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent.
I wonder how many Patrick Waugh jerseys Keener does in a given year.
I don't know. You can ask him.
And if so, of those jerseys, how many are Habs versus Avalanche jerseys?
It's a fair question. Do you still associate him more with the Montreal Canadiens than the Colorado Avalanche?
Oh, come on. Of course.
Yeah, Drew, he's still a Hab.
I'm just asking.
Still on two cups with the Habs. Two with both, but...
Yeah, I mean, he won cups with both teams.
Still a Hab. That's where he came to be.
I know. I mean,
Montreal, he's a Quebec native, yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to just ask. I mean, he's the head coach of the Colorado Avalanche now. It's not an outrageous question.
Oh, it was a little outrageous.
He could have been coach of the Habs, but then they offered him 2 years.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
They made the right decision because Therrien's done a great job.
He has. Obviously, we'll talk about the Canadiens in this segment. They lose Carey Price for 6 weeks. You know, he was out with the injury. He comes back, and his first game, he gets injured again. He's out for 6 weeks now with a knee injury. Third game, pardon me.
Yeah.
You know, did they rush him back too soon in your mind? I mean, if he got injured so quickly,
no. We had Marty Biron on, who covers the Montreal Canadiens,
mm-hmm.
And you know, for TSN and NHL Network and RDS, and you know, he didn't think they rushed him back, and I mean, especially when you have Richie, the medical staff in place, and you got to think that they thought that Carey Price was ready to come back into the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an unfortunate situation. Mike Condon's done an excellent job. You're going to see Dustin Tokarski play a little bit more. He struggled, and that's why Mike Condon won the backup job over Dustin Tokarski. But, hey, PK Subban was on TSN talking about this. They've got to step it up in absence of Carey Price. And when Carey Price was injured initially and Mike Condon went into the lineup for him, not into the lineup, but became the number one goalie for the Montreal Canadiens, Drew, he did an excellent job, and I think maybe we underestimated how good this Montreal Canadiens defense is. And after PK Subban and Andre Markov, a guy like Nathan Beaulieu starting to come along,
yes.
Really good defenseman, you know, and this Montreal Canadiens team, I think, as a whole, as a collective, is good defensively, led by a guy like Thomas Pulkanik, an excellent two-way forward, but you got to also factor in Brendan Gallagher, who's out of the lineup as well. To me, that has an equal amount of importance as far as the Montreal Canadiens go, because he plays top-line minutes, goes out and plays in different situations. So Montreal Canadiens, luckily, Richie, are in a position where they've racked up so many points. So I wouldn't be as worried about it. And you've still got such a great supporting cast after those two players. So not that worried about the Montreal Canadiens. This is a very deep team. And I think maybe before the season started, the question was, could they repeat that 110 points or whatever mm-hmm. it was from last year? And they were surely on pace for that even more. So I think they'll be all right. Very well-coached team, as I mentioned, with a lot of good supporting players. So Price will be back quicker than we think. And I don't think they're going to go on any type of losing streak, certainly. I think they might not do as well they would have with Price in the lineup because he's the best goalie in the world.
Right.
Worth also noting, sorry, Richard, that they're without Brendan Gallagher as well right now. He's out with some fractured fingers. Mm-hmm. He's also going to be out for about 6 weeks, I believe.
I mean, they're up by 9 points in the division.
Sure.
The division's not that good. I'm still not entirely sold on the Habs being upper echelon, but there aren't many upper echelon teams in the league this year, especially in the Eastern Conference. So, I mean, I consider, I've told you guys before, Washington to be the best team, and the Rangers are right there. Montreal's right there, but there's going to be upsets in the playoffs, like there always are. But, you know, the Habs are a good team, and I think you get Carey Price a rest here. You have a huge buffer. You're the best goal differential in the league. You're going to struggle a little bit. I agree that you're not playing at the same level you were before,
mm-hmm.
But you got to, you know, hold out until Price is back, and as long as you get that home ice advantage in the first round, that's really what you're playing for.
Sure.
And the Habs have lost 5 games in regulation so far this year.
They're very good.
It's incredible.
I mean, they're going to err on the side of caution, of course, when it comes to Price now in terms of he won't be back in the lineup until he's 105%.
Which is fine.
Yeah, which is fine. Which exactly. Is fine. You've played well enough through the first 27 games to allow yourself that breathing room. Shifting focus from Carey Price back to 20 years ago this week.
Okay.
Patrick Waugh. I mean, still, I can, you know, it's still burned into your memory, as I assume it is for both of you gentlemen. The Saturday night at home against the Red Wings, they leave him in net to face 8 goals against, and then they finally pull him, and as he walks past the head coach and he leans over and he says,
Mario Tremblay,
the head coach, and he leans over to Rajon Houl.
Ronald Corey, I thought it was.
Right, yeah, pardon me, Ronald Corey, that's right. Leans over and he says, I'm done as a member of the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, seminal moment. In the NHL, in the 1990s of the NHL, certainly. And I think
it was the end of an era.
It was the end of an era, and yep. I think you can make an argument that set the Montreal Canadiens franchise back for a good
For sure.
10 years. I don't think I'm over.
Yeah, I mean, until Theodore came to be there.
Yeah, but Theodore was a bit of a flash in the pan.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, Thibault didn't do the job, and then who was part of that trade?
Right.
That was Thibault, Kovalenko, and Rushinsky, I think it was.
And for Carey Price, and of course, pardon me, Patrick Waugh, of course, and Mike Keane.
Mike Keane, that's right.
Because, you know, I think
Waugh... take anything away from my boy Jeff Hackett.
Jeff Hackett, yeah. So, I mean, that's what they were dealing with, though. Jeff Hackett's of the world, not Patrick Waugh. I agree, Drew. If they had him play till whenever Patrick Waugh played his career, obviously wins the cup in 96 and 2001.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, would the Habs have won a cup again? I don't know, but they would have had a heck of a better shot than they did. And they had some teams that caused some noise later. Their management was a little bit out of sorts there. And sure, they had a lot more success than some other teams over those periods, but it never seemed like there was a vision. And Mario Tremblay never had a coaching job again after that. He coached with Minnesota and was a trusted wingman of Jacques Lemaire, and I think kind of probably, you know, changed his approach there.
There was an arrogance towards him when he was behind the bench. And
you embarrass a goalie, Drew. You don't leave your best goaltender in the game when you're down 8-1.
No, you don't.
And I don't think you do that to any goalie,
that's right.
By the way.
Right.
It doesn't matter what level. There, at a certain level, it's you know what it's like, Drew? It's like that incident was like in boxing when you throw in the white towel. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be a white towel, but you throw in the towel, right? You pull the goalie because it's over,
yeah.
Right? At a certain point, the boxer, I mean, it's like in Rocky, right? Remember when they could have thrown in the towel with Creed, right? But, I mean, it's a situation where...
It's an interesting analogy.
I want to see that movie, by the way, Creed.
I knew that's basically where you're going with that, eh?
I'm going to listen to Creed before I go see Creed.
That's good.
But, I mean, that you mentioned the word seminal. I mean, it's such an iconic image, right?
Yeah.
Patrick Waugh walking by Ronald Corey and then giving that look of just utter disgust to Mario Tremblay, right? And you knew that was it. You knew he was going to get traded. And you mentioned that it set the Montreal Canadiens back, Drew, but it also really paved the way for the Colorado Avalanche to win the Cups.
100%.
Because Patrick Waugh was so good over the years in Colorado, and there were so many good players there, Forsberg, Sakic, Blake, Bork. I mean, we could go up and down. Alexei Gusarov. I mean, you can Adam Deadmarsh.
You want to name the 96 Avs?
Yeah, I know.
I'd be happy to do that.
Go ahead.
Curtis Lysicien.
We know that you can do it, so go ahead.
Craig Willanen's kid's actually playing for UND. He was on that Avs 96
right.
team, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a savant. You know, you have to have your ego has to be so out of control.
Chris Simon.
Well, you're dealing with two egos there, Drew.
Of course you're dealing with two egos, but only one of those egos
is
the one that matters, is the greatest goaltender, arguably, who ever played the game.
Arguably, who ever played the game.
You know, Mario Tremblay, no one ever said he was the greatest head coach in
that's
the
right,
game.
That's right.
I mean, and like he came in with the intention to burn the bridge.
Dan Hinote.
Like, he never...
That was 01. That was on 96.
But I'm just talking about...
You're not just naming Colorado Avalanche Stanley Cup champions.
I guess the question really is what if that happens today? The media outrage over an incident like that.
Yeah.
What would happen? With Twitter, it would explode, all these things. You know what I mean? So it's a lot of experts, right? So
I'm getting 5 million tweets about the fact that Jonathan Bernier played an AHL hockey game yesterday.
Yeah,
I want to shoot myself in the head listening to all
of them. Well, that's what I'm saying. If this had happened to Dominic Hasek, or so, for example, today, if Carey Price was left in for 8 goals. It happens to be Montreal. But if Carey Price gets left in when he's healthy for 8 goals by Michel Therrien, he has a fiery personality, and he demands a trade. Does the world explode?
Probably. I mean, it's just breathless updates constantly.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how quickly, I mean, that trade came together, 2 days, 3 days later?
Well, that was a problem for Montreal, right? And Pierre Lacroix swooped in and had some ties. Was he not Patrick Roy's agent?
I don't remember that part about it. But, I mean, it seemed like the only place he was ever going to go after the incident was Colorado. You know, they send him out west, like you said, there might have been some ties. It seemed like it was, Colorado had the young goaltender that Montreal wanted back, the young French-Canadian goaltender to, follow in the footsteps
of
Patrick
Roy. Yeah,
Thibault
was highly regarded, Drew, but, I mean, Kovalenko and Rutschinski are already capped out. I mean, good players, both good. Rutschinski had a better career, but limitations. And Thibault's kind of an example for a well-heralded netminder, how hard it is to project netminding success, whereas with Roy, you added what? 10 years of proven track record, two cups and everything.
Thibault had, you replace Patrick Roy in Montreal as a French-Canadian goaltender.
It's like replacing Price with Bernier kind of thing.
Yeah.
That kind of idea.
Yeah. It's an impossible situation for
most
goaltenders.
I don't mean to compare Price to Roy, Roy won 4 cups. So.
And I think, Drew, what to me is the funniest or most fascinating about looking back 20 years on that trade, similar to kind of looking back to the late 80s when Wayne Gretzky was traded 25 years ago, you didn't think there was any chance that could ever happen, right?
Yeah,
that's true.
And it was the same type of situation. Patrick, like, nobody would ever fathom a situation where Carey Price would be traded now, right? Like, why would you ever trade?
Right.
Like, Carey Price will be a Hall of Famer. He's already a Hall of Famer almost with what he's done, accomplished at the Olympic level and all the accolades. He hasn't won the Stanley Cup yet, but that might happen sooner than you think, right? Just because he's that good. But with Patrick Roy at the time, because he was in the prime of his career, just like Gretzky was in the prime of his career at that time, right? But it shows you that a fractured relationship between a coach and a player can change everything. It might happen with John Cooper and Steven Stamkos if what we've been told is true.
We'll see. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll discuss the Detroit Red Wings. I misspoke. The game is actually not on TSN3. My apologies for that. Anyways, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. If you're looking for a place to hang out on New Year's Eve, maybe Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club is your destination. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
I'm not looking for a place to hang out on New Year's Eve because I'll be at your place.
Will not be at my place under any circumstances whatsoever. I hate to divulge you of that notion.
Aren't you out of town?
That's probably why you're not going
to
be at...
You need someone to check on your place, maybe check the mail, walk the dog.
Yeah, are you licensed and bonded? First of all, the dog, by the way, is not staying at my house by herself.
Well, yeah, but I thought I exercise the gaskets.
Yeah, okay, I know.
Something, I mean, just check on
the
place.
That would be good to get some exercise.
Yeah.
If he's not willing to do it himself, he might as well exercise the gaskets.
Yeah, I should exercise my own gaskets.
Yeah. Anyways, God help us all. The Detroit Red Wings, very quietly, sort of under the radar.
They're hot right now.
Playing some very good hockey, exactly. They're hot.
Hotline bling.
No, not the hotline. They're hot like, what's his name? Owen Wilson's character in Zoolander.
Stefan?
No, that's not. That's,
oh,
not
that's an SNL
that's
character.
That's an SNL character.
Hansel.
He's hot. He's so hot right now. Exactly.
I thought Richie's quicker on the trigger.
I'm not a big movie guy.
Anyways, the Red Wings are...
I watch hockey to prepare for the show.
Red Wings are 6-0-3 in their last nine games. They've moved up to second place in the Atlantic Division, which sort of quietly is a pretty lousy division, pretty mediocre at best. You know, what is this Red Wings team? They have a goals for goals against differential of only plus one.
Yeah, it's a little surprising, Drew. They've had, you know, periods of time of being outshot and not controlling the puck, and that's been kind of fairly well chronicled. But they have a lot of skill. Pavel Datsyuk back in the lineup now is a huge difference. He still hasn't gotten going totally yet. I think that will come. You know, get back in the groove here. You know, on the back end, and Mike Green kind of settling in, but like putting up some more points. There's certainly the skill there to beat anybody, I feel like. On any given night, this team can beat anybody. You want a little bit more consistency. I think Jeff Blashill's kind of learning on the job. You know, obviously he had coached with Mike Babcock, then coached a lot of these players in the AHL. I think he's hoping for a little bit more from, you know, you're seeing Nyquist and Tatar, talented players, getting going. Applicator, you know, kind of catching fire again from before. But you want to, Datsyuk, those guys are going to be most important. Your veterans are still going to be very important here. And I think you haven't really seen this team perform well all at the same time.
Sure.
So I think their ceiling is certainly higher than it is. They've benefited from the fact that, you know, they're in second place. They have 32 points, and I think they can play better. So if this is them playing poorly, in my opinion, I think they're not playing that particularly well overall, although better lately. That's a good sign that they can put up these points while still trying to find their game.
Should we be surprised, Desi, you know, that new head coach, new regime there, you know, after, well, maybe not a new regime.
It's not a new regime.
It's the same system because they, you know, but new head coach, new voice.
Yeah.
You know, that should we be surprised that it's sort of taken them this 20, 25 games to sort of get their feet under them and sort of adapt to Jeff Blashill as the head coach?
No, and it's a good question, Drew, because at the beginning of the season, that was the question. How were they going to be under Jeff Blashill, because Mike Babcock had been there for so long? Mm-hmm. And at the time, I remember we said on the season preview show that you're really a fool if you don't pick the Red Wings to make the playoffs, because they make the playoffs every single year, and they have for years, decades now, right? And this Detroit Red Wings team had some injuries to start the season, and they do have some injuries, Drew, as I know you wanted to mention, with Timo Polkinen, who's a rookie for them, out of the lineup right now.
Yeah.
So, and he's been a nice surprise. He's got six goals on the season.
Polkinen and Drew Miller are both going to be out of the Wings lineup for the next 6 weeks
and
after
Drew Miller,
suffering injuries.
A good, solid, kind of grinding type of defensive forward.
Yeah.
You know, less significant of an injury as opposed to Timo Polkinen, but the point is, with this Detroit Red Wings team, it's a younger team than it has been in years past. Sure. But to Richie's point, it's always led by Zetterberg, Datsyuk, and Nicholas Cronwall, right? These are the guys that have been there for so long and had the success in the playoffs. And I think with the Detroit Red Wings, you know, the players that they acquired going out and getting Mike Green and Brad Richards, and I know Brad Richards hasn't played all the games, but I think the right types of players to surround this young team. And, you know, Rich mentioned some players like Riley Shane have struggled a little bit, and Justin Abdelkader signed the big contract, and he's picked up a little bit of the slack offensively. But you have certain players that are still struggling to get their offensive game going. And that's even more reason to believe that this Detroit Red Wings team is a team in the Eastern Conference, Rich, that you don't want to play in the playoffs. I mean, we saw how close they were to defeating the Tampa Bay Lightning. And to me, that's the sleeping giant in the division.
I agree with that. It's a good, I was going to say that. I think that's a great apt description for them, Ezzy.
Yeah, I think, Drew, you know, Dylan Larkin's obviously been very impressive. They're young players, and they have a lot of young players, as he's pointed. It's just, you know, you mentioned Brad Richards, who's been struggling, been demoted. Mm-hmm. Datsyuk played 5 points in 11 games. Zetterberg started better, kind of faded a bit, picking up his game a little bit lately.
Wait till they get going.
Well, those core guys, I mean, again, they're older. These guys are older now. But I still think it's very important that they carry their weight, and then they can complement the young players while they grow into their roles as the go-to guys. So it's a matter of all kind of reaching the same point together. That the veterans don't dive down too quickly, and the youngsters meet that level and step up, which I expect them to do, and they are doing, in my opinion.
If they get going on all cylinders, like you're talking about, you have three very good scoring lines here.
You do for sure.
You've got guys like Darren Helm and Joachim Andersen and Luke Glendening, who's an excellent, I think, underrated fourth line center for the Detroit Red Wings. They've got a lot of depth. That defense,
I include Helm and the veterans, Ezzy, by the way.
Right, and
He's only 29. You think he's sort of older at this point. Now.
The defense leaves a little bit to be desired.
It does.
They can move the puck a little bit better, but in certain shutdown roles against the talented teams like the Rangers and the Capitals, they struggle. Mm-hmm. But it's still a team, as Richie mentioned, it's a fast team. It's a skilled team. It's a well-coached team. Goaltending's been a surprise, I believe, too, and that was the issue with Peter Mrazek and Jimmy Howard. Who's really going to take over that role?
They're both performing very well,
and they have two good goaltenders, one A, one B, right? So it's a team again. I think that the Jets are going to play the Wings, I believe, December 29th at MTS Center. I think I'm doing the pre and post with Darren Bombing. That's why I remember that one. So it's going to be always a fun game because there's always a lot of fans in the crowd at MTS Center with the original six, right? We saw that with Toronto. So
and of course Darren Helm being a Manitoba boy.
Yep, nightmare on Helm Street.
Him staying healthy is obviously is a big factor. Darren Helm is a very effective player, and his ability to play center and wing. But I include him in those, as I said, include him in those veteran roles, and I agree with Ezzy's points on the defense. So if there's some ifs. We've put out a lot of ifs, but there's also the possibility of a high return on that.
Sure.
And you get settled in with a guy like Jeff Blashill, and again, a lot of these players have played for him. It's kind of similar to the John Cooper thing in Tampa Bay, you know, playing for him in the AHL, and you're accustomed to him. So, I still think, you know, Kevin Allen was on the show in October, picked them, I believe, to make it to the Stanley Cup final. Certainly a knowledgeable hockey man. So I think the potential is there to do that.
Wouldn't surprise me.
But also the potential is there to lose in the first round. And you can say that about a lot of teams in this league.
Sure.
Maybe not to get to the final, but to lose in the first round. And there's a coin flip in that first, second round that you didn't have before with the cap and such. I think, though, before we go to break here, on Ezzy's point, that other defenseman. I mean, do you use Brendan Smith, Jakob Kindle to tournament? Can you even turn him into something that'll be as effective, you know, as a guy that they need? Because I think that's a top four defensive defenseman.
That's what they need.
Yeah, like a really reliable one. Like if you look at their back end right now.
Yeah, Cronwall, Green, DeKaiser, Erickson, Smith, Marchenko, Jakob Kindle on the bench. Kyle Quincy on
Carl Alzner type, and I know they don't grow on trees. You're seeing him today. That kind of guy. You know, can you rely on him in defensive roles? And people don't realize that because Cronwall came through the system so late, like a lot of Red Wings prospects did, he's actually a lot older than you may think.
Sure, Cronwall is actually closer to 35 right now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's up there in age. An interesting team to sort of keep your eye on. Obviously, you're not going to pay a ton of attention out there in the East. You're only going to see him the once here at MTS Center. Mm-hmm. But this is a really interesting team, I think, to keep an eye on as the season unfolds. And, you know, as you get closer into, you know, the playoff race and the trade deadline and that time frame. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment on this early edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. One final segment on this Saturday morning of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests. In case you missed any of those interviews, we'll have them available on illegalcurve.com, on tsn1290.ca. That was Ben Raby, Capitals pre- and post-game show host, Matthew Schneider of the NHL PA, and of course Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times. We always finish the show with the same segment. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Steve Moses was brought over to the Nashville Predators from the KHL this offseason, and he was expected to make a splash as he had put up some good offensive numbers over in the KHL. Well, that has quickly ended as he has been waived by the Predators and seems to be on his way back to the KHL. Are you surprised that the Steve Moses experiment ended so quickly and, you know, he made such a little impact?
Well, unfortunately, Steve Moses wasn't able to part the Red Sea in Nashville. But I mean, he was a guy who
got to at least humor him by chuckling, Richard.
Well, I mean, he's a guy, Richie, that obviously has had a lot of success at the KHL level and in the Finnish SM Liga with Jokerit, putting up really good numbers there. And they brought him over, and unfortunately, he wasn't able to crack the lineup, as Drew mentioned. But I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that he won't get another opportunity, but. As we know, I mean, there's only a certain amount of roster spots in the NHL, and the Nashville Predators, even though they're maybe more thin than some teams up the middle, I mean, you've got a lot of talented players there. Cali Yarncroc is one of those players that has surprised me, certainly, really young player that came over in the David Legwand trade. But you know, it's unfortunate for Steve Moses, but I'm sure that he it still has a great career ahead of him. He's only 26 years old, so
kind of odd. Pretty quick decision, no?
25 games? Doesn't cost you anything to keep him around.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe he wanted to go back there. He thought he can make more money and have better success. And I don't know the personal stuff there, but I was surprised. You know, I think it's a worthy risk. I think $1 million for 1 year. I don't mind when teams take those risks. There's no such thing as a bad 1 year contract. We've said that on the show before, and it didn't work. And you know, it worked with Mike Ribeiro last year.
Yeah.
And different circumstances, but the idea that you bring in a guy, you take a risk on him, and sometimes it works. It doesn't hit every time.
Well, you've seen it work in Chicago with Panarin. I mean, he was just an undrafted free agent out of Russia. You know,
different though, Drew. I think.
Yeah, more talented.
Younger,
but I'm saying,
player, more talented.
Yeah. But you know, taking a flyer on a guy is what I'm saying can work.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people who've seen Panarin play in the league and probably think, hey, maybe we should have been more involved.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, the Blackhawks look like they've struck gold there for the cost of nothing.
They really do.
Yeah,
they really do. He's that good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Seattle, or not getting to Seattle yet. We've been expecting that there'd be an announcement regarding NHL expansion for really a number of months now, but every time the Board of Governors meet, which is upcoming this week, or general managers, or whatever it is, they seem to kick that can down the road regarding expansion. Now news earlier this week that Victor Coleman in Seattle, who wants to own an NHL team but hasn't been able to get the arena deal done, might be willing to consider the Key Arena, which is where the Seattle Supersonics used to play, the NBA Seattle Supersonics. Do you think the NHL has been sort of holding out hope that the Seattle expansion would come to fruition, and that's why we haven't seen an official announcement regarding NHL expansion so far?
Yeah, which is bizarre, because Quebec City is ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear
Vegas
all about Vegas
ready
being ready to go. So yeah. It's bizarre they're so adamant about Seattle, and they talk about, well, the divisions, and there's 14. Obviously, that doesn't seem to be too big of an issue for them. I mean, I think it's kind of unfair, but you know, 14 and 116 in the other conference. But yeah, that seems to be the case, Drew. And I mean, how much more can we hear about this? I don't know. I just don't think there's enough talent right now to have 32 teams. Oh, I mean, some of these games are unwatchable, and you're just going to spread your talent around the league even more. And I just don't think, I think it's a poor decision. And I think, especially when you look at some of the franchises and the issues that we're hearing about Arizona going back into Phoenix or Scottsdale.
What about the fact, Richie, that Seattle didn't actually formally put in an expansion bid?
Well, they didn't, I mean, because by the counts, they didn't have their ducks in a row.
But that's even more reason to wonder why the NHL, as Richie mentioned, is so interested in going to Seattle. Because
they're not interested.
Vegas' arena is almost...
Typical NHL thinking. They don't seem to want us, so we're going to want them more.
Yeah.
And to Richie's point, I mean, I don't think we're going to see expansion for at least 3 or 4 years. I really don't think it's happening in the next couple of years. And I think there's other ownership situations that need to be resolved, particularly Carolina.
Sure.
So I think...
Exactly.
I think you're not going to see an expansion team, and I agree with you. I mean, we know the NHL wants to be in Vegas, and they should want to be in Quebec City. I would love personally to see a team mm-hmm. back in Quebec City. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people here in the city of Winnipeg would love to see that. But again, a lot of things have to happen, right? And as you mentioned, it looks like the NHL is slow playing their hand right now.
In Edmonton, we touched briefly on the Oilers before earlier in the show. We didn't really touch about their goaltending, though. Everybody expected Cam Talbot, who they acquired from the Rangers in the offseason, to be their number one goaltender and grab that job and run with it. Well, it hasn't
everybody
turned
expected
out.
That? I mean, did he play, what, 35 games with the New York Rangers?
Are you telling me they didn't expect that?
Well, maybe they expected, but did everybody expect that?
I think people thought that he was ready to become a legitimate number one goaltender.
All right.
Okay.
He played a total of, 57 games with the Rangers?
Yeah, well, I mean, and he had good numbers. Granted, he was playing in front of a good team.
57
so.
Games against one of the best defense teams in the league.
Anyways, Cam Talbot hasn't worked out that well for the Oilers so far, so much so that Anders Nilsson has taken over that goaltending job, starting 12 of the Oilers' last 15 games. I guess you probably have answered this question already then, Richard, with your response. How surprised are you that Anders Nilsson has taken over that job and not Talbot himself?
Yeah, you're surprised. And, I mean, you're talking about another guy that has less experience than Cam Talbot. He was a backup for Yaroslav Halak on Long Island. And his numbers, quite frankly, weren't that good. So I am surprised, because you'd expect Cam Talbot to certainly have played more games, Richie, at this point.
Yes.
But, you know, it's tough. I mean, Cam Talbot, they invested a lot in Cam Talbot. And it doesn't necessarily mean that Cam Talbot can't reclaim the starter's role in Edmonton. You also have to factor in, too, that the Edmonton Oilers defense has not been very good in front of him. And they had injuries. Justin Schultz was injured. And players that they've acquired haven't gotten the job done, right? So I would expect Cam Talbot to reclaim the starter's role in Edmonton. I think he's a better goalie than Anders Nielsen. But, hey, Anders Nielsen, good for him. This is his first real opportunity to be given the majority of starts on a team. And, you know, maybe he does better than Talbot. But I just think that Edmonton Oilers team as a whole isn't very good. I just don't think they're going to win enough games to get into the playoffs.
Not enough games, really, to make a judgment on whether or not Talbot's the guy, in my opinion. Based on New York, and it's not enough games now to make the decision. The problem is, in this day and age, or any day and age, the goaltender, you can't wait three seasons to know if he's the guy, because you'll be fired.
Exactly right.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Paul.
I'm going to give, I had this chair in the, for a while here. Clark Gillies, his former New York Islanders, raised a ton of money for a New York hospital. The former Islanders raised a lot of money. Nobody's really, you know, Larry Brooks wrote about it a few weeks ago, but he hasn't got a lot of attention and, excuse me, he hasn't played in the league in many, many years, but still giving back from his role, as a very well known and, contributing player to the Islanders dynasty of the 80s.
Ezra Ginsberg.
I'm going to cheer. I don't know if you saw this in Edmonton last night. There was a fan that was wearing a Speedo, and he was holding up a sign that said, "Let's go Dallas, number 38, because he lost a bet with Vernon Fiddler on the Dallas Stars because of a bet that they had made that Vernon Fiddler couldn't lose a certain amount of weight in a certain time period. So I'm cheering that because I just thought it was hilarious.
When did you get back?
Yeah, the guy,
implication there, Ezra, was that
the guy kind of looks like
Speedo.
Me. Yeah, with the cowboy hat and Anyways, you should look that up. It was pretty funny.
I'll wrap up Cheers and Jeers. I'm going to remind everybody about Toy Mountain that's happening at CF Polo Park. It's always it's sort of our favorite show of the year, and it's unfortunate this year that with the Jets game on, we're not able to be there. So we'll have to save it and do it twice as well next year. But if you're in the neighborhood of Polo Park, check it out, CF Polo Park. Bring an unwrapped gift for the Salvation Army and Toy Mountain taking place at CF Polo Park today. That's it for this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Matthew Schneider of the NHLPA, Ben Raby, Capitals pre- and post-game show host, and Mark Lazarus of the Chicago Sun-Times. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Psycho on Life, and Keener Jerseys. Big thank you to Dancing Gabe for the Christmas card.
Yes, yeah. We should have given a joint
Merry Christmas to Gabe.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas to everybody else. Yep. Happy Hanukkah to you boys. It starts tonight.
Light those candles tomorrow night, Drew.
Tomorrow night. Okay, tomorrow night. There you
well,
go.
Well, that candle.
Anyways, that's it for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Producer Al. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. This has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless.